This is Trepwire with a special podcast. I'm Martha Kocher with Trep, a data modeling and analytics firm for the CMBS, commercial real estate and CLO markets. I'm with Manus Clancy, Senior Managing Director, and Lonnie Henry, Head of CRE and Advisory Services. And today we're talking to Rachel Brown, Senior Vice President, CRE for the Bank of Tampa. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yeah, I always like to think of myself more as a commercial real estate person than a banker. Banking was something more I fell into. I've always been attached to the commercial real estate world in some way. I was born in Michigan, but my father was a commercial real estate developer up there. He had sold a large asset up there and decided commercial real estate in Michigan, probably not as hot as Florida, no surprise there, and moved us to Naples, Florida, part of the state that he found the most opportunity. Really, you know, it's hard to kind of gauge when my career in commercial real estate started. I worked with him for a long, long time, going in front of the city and municipalities to rezone properties and to, you know, put marketing pieces together for brokerage. So there was always something I was involved with at home with my father as a real estate developer, and then really got to see, you know, firsthand the kind of upswing from 2005 to 2007, 2008, and then the collapse from the front row. He got crushed down there. A lot of people in Florida got crushed. And I think being in Tampa right now, watching kind of uncertainty in the market, everyone still has PTSD from that time. And so we're all much more on edge probably than a lot of places. And on the flip side, probably have less reason than a lot of places to be on edge. So we're all just trying to, you know, be hypersensitive to the market right now to make sure we don't repeat what we did back then.
Yeah, that's a great introduction, Rachel. It's great to have you on this week. For commercial real estate, it seems like the Tampa area continues to be a popular region as a place, you know, a lot of workers and employees relocated to from other parts of the country coming out of the pandemic. From your perspective, since you've been there for so long and you're touching so many different people at the bank that come in, you know, what do you think drives Tampa being so compelling for the industry and for those relocations?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I ended up moving to Tampa for work. It wasn't really on even my radar. Being in Naples, going to college in Miami, it just never really was something I thought of as a real strong viable option for me. It was more just out of necessity. And once I got here, I realized it's such an amazing city. It really has a lot of the benefits of being in a big city with a lot of the small town feel still. Once I kind of started realizing all the characteristics of this place, it was really surprising to me that more companies hadn't moved down here. There wasn't more people looking to move here than there were. And what I had heard a lot of from companies was that it was just too hard to find the talent down here. And I think there was a slow kind of boil from, you know, 2010, 11, as we were coming out of this great recession to, you know, really COVID, where everything just accelerated. It's almost like adding gas to the fire of what was already starting here. And really, I mean, 2020 was almost an advertisement for Florida, for Tampa specifically. I mean, we won 2 Stanley Cups. We won a Super Bowl. One thing that I kind of think is important is the Michelin Guide came to Florida. They're now in Tampa, Orlando, and Miami, which will kind of put us more on the map internationally. We're the 18th largest MSA. We're bigger than Denver, Nashville, Charlotte, but I feel like we sometimes don't get the attention that, you know, other cities do. And I don't really know why that is. It might be a little bit of a identity crisis. Tampa had historically been more back office space. It's a port city, a little more kind of blue collar kind of going into all this. But really, since the Great Recession, we've transitioned a lot of where our jobs are coming from, where are people, you know, people moving here for those jobs and really leaning less on port, the hospitality industry, and really developing a lot more industries beyond that. So maybe it's an identity crisis a little bit, but I think there's so many reasons to want to live here. Again, in the past 2 years, everyone seemed to be figuring that out at a much greater rate than they had been. And, you know, we're loving it, obviously, and it's great for our commercial real estate industry.
So, Rachel, you stole a little bit of my thunder talking about the Stanley Cups and the Super Bowl.
Same.
That was going to be my next point. You know, it really seems like Tampa's cup has runneth over the last couple of years. We talked about the sports success. Even when you get poked in the eye and Tom Brady retires, he abruptly unretires about 3 weeks later, and it all works out okay. You've attracted some Fortune 500 companies in the last couple of years that have really opened up new veins, if you will, for the Tampa economy. It seems like everything is clicking on all eight cylinders. What can go wrong?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. And I think our memory from the Great Recession, you know, no one wants to fangirl too hard on Tampa because they're just almost waiting for the bottom to drop out, which I will say is a lot different than back then. I don't think anyone really saw what was about to come before it hit them. And this time it's like, we're all, like I said, hypersensitive, you know, waiting to see what's going to happen. There are some things I'm tracking. I think the Fed put the supervisory report out the other day where they're concerned about commercial real estate exposure. I read it a couple times. The data in there wasn't very strong. I think I did kind of do a deep dive into the percent of CRE exposure to tier one from a lot of banks that we compete with. And, you know, there have been a lot of banks around here that have just been kind of gorging themselves on particularly multifamily construction, but a lot of commercial real estate, especially construction, as they expand into the area, as their customers expand into the area. And, you know, we are watching that closely. We have at the Bank of Tampa, we're, you know, a $3.3 billion bank. We're about 160% of our limit on commercial real estate. So we're fairly low. We have a lot of runway there. And I look at it as a little bit of an opportunity where other banks are probably over their skis and we can come in and kind of swoop in and pick up, you know, the best of the best as other banks pull back. But we are very concerned about office, as a lot of places are. We hadn't really had a new office built in the area since about 1992. We've had a handful of new offices deliver within the past two years or so, which they're leasing up well. They're leasing up at very strong rental rates, you know, which compared to the rest of the country may not be as strong comparatively. I mean, we went from a, you know, call it $28 per square foot, top of the market before COVID, to now we're in the 40s, maybe even pushing 50. So we're watching, especially, you know, what that's going to do to the kind of class BC market in office. We're at a record amount of sublease space out there right now. There are companies that are backfilling that. And there are a lot of companies in shared office space right now waiting to find locations. Very comparable to multifamily. There's a lot of people renting right now in Tampa that are looking to find a house. My concern would be, we have 3% or less unemployment. Our company is going to come here and find that they can't find people to work and move back. Are people going to move here, rent, find, like, you know, they can't find a house and move back? So we are looking at those items too. Obviously, the population growth has been something we're very proud of, but, you know, we want to make sure we can keep that here. And then our industrial space, I mean, a lot of it is distribution. We have a lot of that kind of million square foot space that has been going out kind of in the I-4 corridor that so far has been leasing up very, very well. When you hear things like Amazon pulling back from project, it makes you wonder, where is it going to end? When's the last shoe going to drop on that? And then who's going to get left with that empty million square foot that you can't divide into smaller users? So we're keeping an eye on that. But again, it's, you know, everything's been so strong, it's kind of hard to confidently pinpoint where we think the weakness is going to be. We're still well below where we need to be on housing. There are a lot of home builders, tract builders that have canceled contracts on land purchases because they're concerned about where interest rates are going, and maybe land prices got a little too hot. So a lot of them are not sitting on a lot of land. Right now, we are also closely watching here at the bank the build for rent space. They're sitting on a lot of land, and that obviously has not matured as an asset class. So we're curious to see where that's going to go. I do think there is a space for it in the long run. The question is, you know, who and where and what that's going to look like.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Rachel. Thank you for kind of going over, you know, the different asset classes. I think we were interested in kind of how each of those, you know, we're faring in today's environment there in Tampa. I wanted to pick up on a couple of them specifically. So multifamily, you know, you talked about the Great Recession 2008. So I went back in our data and pulled some information tied to the Tampa market in that time. So just to give you a quick rundown, in 2008, the weighted average cap rate for new issuance in Tampa for multifamily, this would be garden low rise, was at 12.47%. 2009, it decreased slightly to about 10.28%. And then from 2010 until, call it 2014, it still was above 8% on the cap rate. And then if you get fast forward to 2020, 2021, in 2020, it was 5.5%. And for 2021 year end, we're at 4.28%. So I think it paints a pretty, you know, robust picture in terms of the amount of activity, the compression of cap rates, the increasing values, et cetera, et cetera. So just for some additional color, if you look at the number of properties in our data set for the Tampa market, multifamily, garden, low-rise that were financed, you have, you know, call it 10 to 20 properties a year from 2008 to, you know, roughly 2015, and then it explodes. And so 2015, 66 properties, 2016, 45 properties. Fast forward to 2021, there was 116 properties in our data set. So you have 116 properties and a 4.28% cap rate. So to your point, population trend really has driven a huge demand, it looks like, in housing, which is equated to an explosion in values. So, you know, I heard you talk through, you know, maybe people are waiting for that next shoe to drop. And I would argue at this point, issuance seems to be strong in 22 as well. But those cap rate numbers, if you look at it from a historical perspective, are definitely way lower than they ever have been. So maybe something to keep an eye on there. And then just anecdotally on the industrial side, you mentioned Amazon and maybe some people worrying about if we've hit the top there. So I was on a call yesterday and was looking at some Amazon data in our system. So we track the top five tenants in every multi-tenant facility, whether it's office, retail, or industrial. Every center that has Amazon as a tenant has paid the mortgage. They're 100% current on the mortgage. So there's been no distress from the data we have as it pertains to Amazon, you know, tapping the brakes or maybe missing payments or anything like that. So again, a little bit anecdotal and probably broader than just Tampa, but the data we have, you know, shows that the market still seems to be going strong. So just thought maybe you might want to, you know, give us a little bit of perspective based on looking at those figures that we just covered.
Yeah, you know, that cap rate analysis was very interesting. You know, part of that too, I think, was interest rates. But on the flip side, obviously, interest rates are increasing, and we really haven't seen cap rates kind of follow yet. I'm sure that will happen. Anecdotally, what I've been hearing in the market is that trades have either been, I mean, kind of that May to July retrading at about a 5% haircut to reflect the interest rate changes, or falling apart if they couldn't get a haircut. But we had just previously seen, and you guys had mentioned some of these trades on the pod, handful of properties in, you know, downtown, in Ybor, in St. Pete, that were trading for double where they were, you know, 3 years ago. And that just, I mean, it's just how many markets can you possibly in a 3 year time, you know, double your money, and largely just because of rental rate increases. And that's another thing that, you know, we've been looking at compared to the income, because Tampa Bay in general has historically kind of lagged the rest of the country in incomes. We're seeing our rental rates on average kind of compete with the Austins of the world, right? And so a lot of these are professionally managed. They're doing income analysis. I don't know if, you know, there's some fraud out there in the market, or it's roommates or what, but they're at least on paper able to show the income to support the rental rates. So that's another thing we're trying to figure out as well. And when it goes back to cap rates, it's hard to tell that a going in cap rate and then what is the perform a cap rate based on where they see rents going, and you know, again, where can those go given our incomes?
Has the compression over time led you to be more cautious, right? You know, the cap rates getting under that 4% level, has that given you pause in the last 6 to 12 months?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, from a banking perspective, you know, the banks have been almost by and large, you know, very responsible with how they're lending to. So, you know, a lot of the loans are capping out 70% or less, but typically they're in that kind of 65% range. So there is a lot of equity going into these deals before banks go in there. So would I be more nervous if I was the, you know, large equity player who had, you know, my hands in a lot of very large deals with maybe a developer I don't have a super strong relationship? I'd probably be more nervous there. But the banks, I mean, again, unless you're just really over your skis in one certain asset class or in construction, I'm not as terribly concerned from that standpoint.
How does a bank look at those recent trades? So you talked about some of the transactions we've covered on the podcast over the last couple of weeks where, you know, maybe you have a property that traded 2 years ago for $40 million, and then now it's about to trade again for $65 million. You know, do you give any weight to that historical sales price, knowing that rental rates have gone up and cap rates have gone down, or are you really just underwriting the current deal based on the current financials and current status of the property? Does that come into play at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, comparing us back to the Great Recession, we're so much more cash flow focused now. You know, back then it was, oh, if the appraisal can appraise, then great, let's go for it. So the first question we always look at is, what was the NOI? You know, what were the rental rates? Is this an improvement because of cash flow, or is it just a matter of cap rate compression? So no, I mean, we're always looking at it from a cash flow standpoint. Do the underlying fundamentals of the property make sense?
Thanks for covering the macro market and asset type, Rachel. Maybe for our listeners, a little more Tampa specific. Are there any particular projects or any particular developments that are currently underway in the Tampa market that you'd like to give us a little bit of an overview on?
One huge, I think, part of our development story has been our mixed use projects, and specifically the Water Street project that Jeff Finnick is doing with Cascade is his equity. That's a 70-acre project downtown that has just really timed the market perfectly. You know, there's condos that are selling for record pricing. The office space there is leasing at record pricing, again, for our area. And the apartments there are setting new records even in the state for rental rates. So, you know, for someone to come in, I think, you know, Tampa had been kind of growing at such a slow pace that for someone like him to come in 2012 and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, take 70 acres, I think is what the total space is, and really transform the city. It was kind of that vision before everyone else kind of realized come 8 years later when people started moving here and filling up that space. We have another project called Midtown that's long time been owned by a group out of New York called Bromley. That's about 22 acres, ground floor retail, office space in there, multifamily that has been setting records for trade per unit. And then we have the next one to come is a project called Gasworks in Ybor. That is a local, really, he was a CEO of a veterinary company, but local guy who just has, you know, seen so much potential in Ybor that I feel like hasn't really been tapped into yet. And that's going to be about another 50 or more acres. The Rays Stadium in downtown St. Pete may be a potential master planned, you know, mixed use project, depending on what they decide to do. You know, Clearwater has been a story to follow just because downtown solely been bought up by Scientology. We don't know what their plans are, but I'm sure there's something in the works there. And then we have a affordable project called the West River that's backed by Related. So we have a lot of kind of nodes around the Tampa Bay area that are mixed use that are really creating a draw for people to come out and go to those areas. It kind of, if you build it, they will come, which has just been a huge boon for really every product type, you know, hotel included. So it's been a very interesting story to follow.
Just when we thought things couldn't get any better for Tampa St. Pete, Rachel sets the record straight.
I know. And I didn't want to ignore St. Pete. I feel bad because I sit in Tampa. I cover our whole footprint, which includes St. Pete. And I apologize for not giving them as much love as I should have.
I was a big fan of Clearwater in my 20s. I would go there every March to get out of the New York winter to see some spring training baseball, take in the beaches, and watch NCAA basketball for 10 days with my brother. So big fan of that location. So we saw, Rachel, kind of a change in the tone of the market maybe 2 months ago when that June CPI number came out. You know, ahead of the June CPI number, it seemed like liquidity was still pretty good. Values had maybe ticked down a little bit, but transactions were getting done. In June and July, people seem to be getting a lot more cautious in terms of putting out money. And I'm not really talking about banks per se, but I'm talking about CRE, CLO lenders and the CMBS market. When you see things like this happen, is it time to play offense or defense for a bank?
You know, in the position that we're in, again, having some capacity to do more commercial real estate, I look at it as an opportunity. You know, from a banking perspective, there's a lot of banks that kind of follow each other and all do the same thing. And, you know, we kind of saw this in 15 and 16 when some of the banks were pulling away from multifamily and they got really heavy into senior housing, particularly in Florida. And we just saw kind of that whole industry, you know, get kind of shaky because there was just too much of a flood of capital going into something that maybe they didn't have the business getting into. It's one of those things that, you know, if I see everybody kind of zigging, I want to zag. and you know, in a smart way, obviously. But yeah, I look at it for me as a opportunity to be on the offensive. We're a small bank, you know, we're a community bank. It takes us a day to go from let's implement this strategy and then for me to go out there and do it, right? So I look at it as an opportunity. I could see, you know, much larger banks as they try to, you know, shift like a $1 trillion bank. It's a lot harder to change course there. So
did you notice over the summer a tightening of liquidity? Did you find more inbound requests? Did you find that liquidity was drying up in any way, shape, or form? You know, that was the anecdotal talk we were getting from some of our clients out there. Did you see the same thing, or is just Florida a totally different market?
Yes, yes, no, absolutely. And what we found were banks really pulled back so much during 2020 and kind of going into 2021 that almost, you know, once they realized where the strong markets were, that, you know, money flooding the market was really kind of buoying a lot of the downside that they potentially were seeing, and they knew, you know, again, which markets were sustaining itself. I think they just, again, all kind of followed the same path and rushed after the same things. And so we saw a huge growth in, you know, I get a lot of requests from larger banks to buy into their projects. So I hear a lot about what's going on in the market from my position just sitting here in Tampa. And every single request looked the same, multifamily, non-recourse, you know, 60%. Once you start seeing that over and over again, you kind of realize, okay, clearly there's a trend here. Clearly this might be, you know, I don't want to call it an asset bubble, but something where everyone's throwing the cash into the same direction. You know, maybe there's opportunities in other spots to pick up. And we found that in, you know, in retail, very selectively in office space. I think there are a lot of really good opportunities in hospitality that a lot of banks weren't paying attention to. Once they hit June, you know, May and June, as interest rates started going up and you know, people kind of took the foot off the pedal and realized how much exposure they had to a lot of these across the board. You know, the same banks that were doing all the same kind of loans are now saving their capital for their existing customers or out of it completely until they kind of figure out where it's headed. And again, I just pulled up some of the 630 numbers on, you know, how much exposure to real estate some of our competition have. And there are a lot of banks that are over 300% CRE right now. So again, I look at that as an opportunity.
There's been a lot of talk about whether the Fed in raising rates will trigger a soft landing, a hard landing, what that will look like, whether they'll be able to manage and pull down inflation. What does the economy look like in Tampa right now in terms of, is it being impacted by higher costs? Are you seeing the economy slow down there yet? Or is it just like in COVID when there was 49 states that were getting crushed and then there was Florida, right? Which was just winning, right? Is it still the same now?
You know, the inflation numbers for us are very high just because, again, I think Tampa was so underpriced to begin with. And I don't want to say we're not hurting, but we are seemingly still figuring it out. You know, I mean, people are complaining that their rent is high. People are complaining that, you know, the cost of food is high. But if you just look at the numbers and the retail sales and the foot traffic and, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. I will say the Fed's kind of narrative seems to be, you know, we're stopping inflation at all costs. And that does worry me some because they have a history of not getting it right. And if they're really not on the ground level with the people kind of realizing how it's affecting everything, I think it could be a little short-sighted if they just, again, stop inflation at all costs. So I don't foresee this going very well. But at the same time, I mean, how did they not know that this was going to happen with as much cash as we were printing and we were giving out and, you know, kind of picking the winners and losers during COVID? So kind of their short-sightedness on the front end makes me not really trust how well they're going to handle this on the back end.
So you talked in the beginning about your experience in the great financial crisis and how a lot of mistakes were made and, you know, losses were severe and commercial real estate obviously was very hard hit during that time. Do you see any parallels now in valuation, frothiness, exuberance, lending quality, anything like that, that would make you think this is a little bit like 2008 all over again?
Just from a banking standpoint, you know, the way we look at underwriting and the quality of a loan or an asset or a company is just so different. You know, a lot of it was pro forma lending back then. A lot of it was speculative for all the, I guess, shortcomings or frustrations or whatever banks may have with Dodd-Frank, I mean, it's also done a lot of things to make sure we've reined it in and just been very smart about what we're doing. And there's so much liquidity out there, either between the banks or, you know, on the equity side, that it's just, it's hard to see a lot of parallels other than it feels expensive, right? So again, we're still trying to figure that out, because I think everyone has that muscle memory going back and saying this kind of feels the same. But again, a lot of the underlying fundamentals underneath it aren't.
Rachel, what's the sweet spot for the Bank of Tampa? What do you guys do best?
So we are a local bank funded by local people that have been in the market for 35 years, very well connected to our community. We are C&I lender first and foremost, and have very strong relationships with professionals in the industry. So really from a commercial real estate standpoint, one thing that we are especially good at is in the medical space. We have seen a huge boon in private equity coming in and buying a lot of medical groups' businesses, but a lot of those groups keeping their real estate. And so that's one thing that we're huge in. We do a lot of owner-occupied, but again, on the investment side, I've been able to, you know, capitalize on that base, which is kind of rare, I guess, or you know, different than a lot of other banks, because again, we have that connection. You know, we are in a space that I feel like we don't have a lot of competition just in terms of dollar amount. We're going to be doing those loans that are a little too small for a lot of the regional banks to want to mess with. And we're also going to be able to do some projects that are a little too big for the, you know, very small kind of local guys to want to take down. So, you know, our loan kind of sweet spot is that $5 to $20 million. And coming from Wells Fargo, coming from KeyBank, you know, we never wanted to really mess with anything below 25, right? And so, and you know, Wells Fargo even higher. So I do feel like with banks buying each other, with credit unions coming in buying up banks, that kind of $15 million loan size is just a space that a lot of banks have left. So again, I feel like that gives me a lot of opportunity to pick up a lot of really strong loans with really strong customers that maybe just aren't getting the attention from the bigger guys.
So I'll leave you with one more question. I'm not sure where this one's going to go, because given how we started off with everything going so well with Tampa for the last couple of years, you know, I get the feeling you sleep like a baby down there. But is there something that keeps you up at night in commercial real estate these days, or in the broader economy?
You know, the Fed always worries me. Like I mentioned, he's kind of didn't trust him going into it. Don't really trust him coming out of it. But I would say it's the unknown, right? Because we all have that feeling like there's something that's going to happen. And we really, you know, I haven't really heard anyone smarter than me or economists or anybody really kind of be able to pinpoint, at least in our area, you know, what is that that's going to, you know, hit us again, right? And so I don't know if it's that black swan event or if it's something that we should have seen coming, but that would be it. It'd be the unknown that's really going to, you know, change this storyline and rain on our parade here.
You're definitely the smartest of our lineup here today, Rachel.
You might be the smartest of all. I don't know. I
mean... interestingly, we've just released our Siri sentiment survey. A whopping 89% of the respondents felt that we were going to have a recession by the end of the year or by next year. Here's your chance to weigh in and whether you think Tampa is going to somehow skirt that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about perspective, because again, you know, we've been looking at 35% rental rate growth and, you know, 50% home pricing increases, right? And so if we do go into a recession, whatever your definition of recession wants to be, you know, and we do kind of pull back, let's say it's 5%, right? Is that a terrible thing? I mean, you don't really want to be the last guy in, right? But at the same time, it might be something that will help a lot of people and kind of re-normalize the market, right? So the way I look at it is if we do end up going backwards a little bit, it probably was because we grew a little too fast to begin with. I don't see, again, this is things that keep me up at night. I don't know what would be coming for Tampa specifically, in terms of, you know, shifts in the industry. You know, we don't have a huge tech industry here. A lot of our tech is small tech, startups, entrepreneurs. So we're not getting hit with that right now with, you know, the companies that are shedding huge numbers of people. We probably need a little more unemployment just to create a better job market for people that are moving their companies here and trying to find someone, right? So again, it's all perspective.
And perhaps more importantly, football preseason begins this week. What's going to happen with the Bucs this year?
Oh boy, I'm not touching that one.
No predictions?
No, I'm, you know.
I know you're originally from Michigan. You don't tell me you're still a Lions fan.
You know, that's a tough one. Yeah, I'll say, you know, Brady keeps surprising us. And so you never want to question his performance, right? So I think it'll still be another good year. At least he'll definitely draw the people out the games, which is great. So, but yeah, I'm not touching that one.
He is the Energizer Bunny. With that, we'll close this special podcast. Thank you to our guest, Rachel Brown. Thanks to our producer, Haley Keene. Join us later this week as we look at what's happened during the week and how it may be impacting you. If you have a question, send your email to podcast@trep.com and visit trep.com for more info and subscribe to the podcast with your favorite provider. Thank you for listening and stay well.
All right.